This week's Parsha is Parshas Chayei Sarah, and the main theme of the Parsha is Avram sending Eliezer to find a shidduch for Yitzchak, and because that's the focus of the Parsha, therefore a lot of singles organizations do single Shabbatons this week, and there's a lot of emphasis on dating and marriage throughout the week. Therefore, I want to give the third installment of Lessons from a Decade of Dating, where I'll go through five new lessons and hopefully we'll be able to help those and give some insight into the dating process. The lesson number 11, continuing where we left off, is trust your gut. One thing that I didn't discuss in the previous two shiurim is that I have a broken engagement. At 22 years old, I was engaged to a woman, and Baruch Hashem, she's a great girl, and not chas shalom say anything bad about her. But certainly when it came to the engagement, there was things that didn't seem right for me. And of course, I went and I was consulting Rabbanim, I was speaking to my Rebbeim, and I was speaking to my family members, my father, my brother, my sister, and asking guidance, asking help. And as much as it's beneficial, of course, to ask advice and to hear from people who have an insight into you, an insight into dating and marriage, almost whatever they would say is not enough for a person to really make a decision to end or continue a relationship. Because in the end of the day, it comes from you. And it's not about someone giving a rational reason why this makes sense or why this doesn't make sense, especially when someone's engaged and someone has invested that much into the relationship. But it really is something you have to feel. As a teacher, just a small example, I gave a test this past week, and I just didn't hand in a test, and one of the questions was multiple choice. And I saw like A was circled, then erased, then B was circled, and they came to me and they said, like, here, I wasn't sure about this question, I went with my gut. And it's important a lot of times for a person in life to do that, to go with their gut, and to be able to make certain decisions after, of course, speaking to people and thinking about it and being as rational and as thorough as possible. But in the end, it has to come from you. And an idea that I thought of when it comes to the Torah, when it comes to Hilchos Yom Kippurim, so the halacha is that if you have a person who's sick and they're unsure whether they should eat or not eat. Now, eating on Yom Kippur, when it's not necessity, is karis, is ma'ash, a very serious isser. And a person has to be really sure that they need to eat. And otherwise, then, like I said, it could be a pretty big avera. So if you have a person who, even if the chole, they themselves are like, you know, I'm okay. But a doctor has established, you know, they need to eat, so the halacha is that they need to eat. But continues, Shulchan Aruch and Simen Tafresh Yud Ches. At the end it says, Ve'im ha'chola omer tzarech ani. But if the chola says, I need to eat, my body needs food, afilu me'ya rofim omrim eno tzarech shomim l'chola. Even if 100 doctors will testify that this person is okay, this person doesn't need to eat, we listen to the chola. Because the chola knows themselves the best. We have to trust them, even if it's them versus 100 professionals in the field to say this person is fine. So too, when it comes to dating, as much as you could seek advice from people, as much as things might seem one way, you have to trust yourself. You have to trust your gut and trust your instinct. Lesson number 12, I call this infatuation versus love. I personally, one of my chesronos in dating was that I became very infatuated many times, and also very quickly. And a lot of times, I honestly probably confused infatuation with love. Love is something that is very difficult to really define. What is love? Has a person know if they are in love? Do you feel love? And how much in love does a person have to be? All those things are difficult to really gauge. And for myself, I remember if I went out with someone, it could be just a few dates in, and I felt, you know, this girl is great. Great midos. She's so nice. She seems like she's a real tzanua person. Really, like, loves, I don't know, loves the chemistry, I love the chemistry between us. We're able to talk about anything, whatever it may be, whatever is going well. There are times where I have been infatuated and I let that overtake me and I confuse that with love. And just a few dates in, I'd be like, I would either, as oftentimes I would say it to myself, sometimes I would say to a roommate or I'd be like, you know, I really think I'm going to marry this person. And then literally just a few dates later, the relationship ends and, you know, things normal out. But a lot of times I caught myself and I recognized that I was infatuated and it wasn't actually love. It's important, of course, to find that distinction, to recognize that sometimes when we're so excited about something initially, that doesn't mean that that's how it is. It doesn't mean that the relationship is always going to be at that level. And it doesn't mean, of course, even more importantly, like in almost all these cases, it was, I didn't really know the girl. And I didn't know the person. And it was after time where I really got to know them, where I realized, you know, yeah, right away, on a superficial level, I thought I was in love. But really, when I now come to know them more, I realize it's not something that was right for me. There's so many things that actually bother me, even more so now than before. And there's an idea from the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, where he discusses that one would think that when it comes to Hashem running the world, that the greatest thing Hashem could do is miracles in a very clear, overt way. Like the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, for example. So he split the sea, and we can't imagine anything greater than that. We also would, of course, imagine that every single person there would be the greatest ma'amin and the greatest server of HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever, for the rest of time. I once brought my class from Kushner, one of the low tracks I taught, I brought them on a trip to YU. I was able to entice them to go because I told them that we could go to Golan. I believe the school paid for that. And I said we could hang out in my apartment afterwards. So we could eat Golan there. So that's what got them to go. But the real reason why we were going was I was able to get a shiur from Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg with them. And really, like, was able to speak to them, question, answer. It was about an hour and a half, and it was amazing. And one of the things that transpired there was Rav Moshe Tzvi asked my students, he said, if God right now spoke to you, and you knew right now in this room where we were, he said, it is clear as day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one speaking to you, and you know Hashem exists, will you serve Hashem? And almost all of them, of course, said, yeah, of course we would. And there was one student that said, I don't think I would. And Rav Moshe Tzvi says, yeah, I like your honesty. Because a lot of people would just say, yeah, I would. Like, you know, push, come, shove, maybe we wouldn't. And the Rambam discusses that when we have these overt miracles that happen, they don't last. A person, of course, in that moment is swept away, and they'll feel the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Dveikus, like no other. But shortly after, they go back. They go back to the way it was. And we see that in the example I just gave, by the splitting of the sea, by Kriyas Yamsuf, what happens? Right afterwards, they complain. And they start complaining in the Midbar. And how could it be? And aside from the complaining, shortly after the complaints, then we have the Chet HaEgel. And so clearly we see that this did not impact the way that one would have assumed. And the Rambam says that these miracles are not something that's ideal for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform. Hashem doesn't want to have to go against nature. And even if he does go against nature, don't think it's going to be something that is going to be lasting and keep an everlasting impression for these people. Lesson number 13. Be yourself. One of the relationships I was in, I happened to, like, I find myself being in a lot of different types of hashkafas. It was a little bit tough for me, honestly, when it came to dating, to really, not that anyone should be boxed. Boxing in Yiddishkeit is not necessarily a good thing. Sometimes, though, if a person is boxed, though, you know, I'm looking for this type of person. I fit the mold here. And for me, I was in a lot of different areas of life that made me seem one way, but I could bring something that goes the other way. I listened to, let's say, non-Jewish music and would maybe watch some sports, but I really, like, tremendously valued Torah, which doesn't necessarily go against that, of course, but I had certain yeshivish tendencies and was more intense. And a lot of times I felt myself where if I was dating someone who was a little more to the left than me religiously, honestly, I had a more enjoyable date and I was able to relate to them. I was able to make some like movie or TV references or sports references or music references. And if I was dating someone who's more to the right of me, I also, in a certain sense, of course, felt comfortable and talking about more serious stuff and stuff that really mattered in life. And I realized, though, that I felt inadequate in both. And when I was dating someone a little more to the left, even though I enjoyed a lot of the conversations I was able to have, where I was able to really relate to them, but on the other hand, I was saying, wait, but like the Gemara says in Brachos, or Shem Baruch Hashem says, Torah Matelah, like what's going to be the Torah? Not that these people, Chas V'Shalom, were not from, but I wanted a greater emphasis on Torah. But then, and here's where this lesson comes, is that when I was dating someone who was more to the right, if it was to a certain degree, I felt like I couldn't be myself. I felt like I had to hide certain components of my personality that were more modern. And I felt almost embarrassed to say that I listened to non-Jewish music or that I would watch sports or maybe some movies and things like that. And I felt constantly like I had to be kept in check. Like I couldn't reveal and act in a certain way where I would. And it wasn't just in terms of mentioning things that I would do, but it was even the way I acted. So one of the examples is that I grew up going to Bnei Asherin. And if you've ever been to Bnei Asherin, outside of the main shul, there's a long banister that goes to the lower level. And since I grew up there as a kid, I was able to slide down the banister. Now, I'm not saying this was the frimmest thing to do, but certainly I don't think it wasn't in the sanctuary itself. It wasn't like a bizayon to the Makom HaKadosha like that. But I was able to slide down the banister. And here, right after we davened, I guess one of the days I had to daven, and it was later on in the relationship. And after Minyan, there was no one around. And I slid down the banister. And I turned around when I got to the bottom, and I look up, and I saw a tremendous look of disappointment on her face. And right then and there, I realized, like, I really can't be myself. Because there's almost nothing more than being myself. I'm like, you know, doing something like that. And honestly, as a little bit of an aside, I've done that and showed that to Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, and he thought it was hilarious and amazing. And so this girl did not think it was hilarious and amazing, and she thought it was a pretty crumb thing to do. And I realized that it's very important to feel comfortable, to be able to be with someone where you are yourself. And obviously, you're not going to be able to marry someone who's the exact hashkafa, the exact personality as you, as yourself. But however you go, whether you're a little more to the left, a little more to the right, but for you to be able to have mutual respect with the person you're dating. One of my Rebbe and Rav Baruch Simon, a Rebbe says one of the three important things to look for, and three key components, one of them is mutual respect. You don't have to be exactly like the person. You don't at all. But you have to make sure that each of you respect the other and have a real mutual respect and understanding for the other person. And the Torah lesson, Torah idea from this is actually a story that the holy grandson of the Baal Shem Tov was Rav Baruch of Mezubaj. And Rav Baruch was a very fiery personality in the Devos Hashem. Very intense. Pretty much like if you know about the Kotzker Rebbe, picture like stories you've heard about the Kotzker Rebbe, pretty much a lot of those types of personalities could apply to Rav Baruch Mezubaj. And it was a wish of Rav Levi Yitzchak of Barditchev to go and spend the Shabbos by Rav Baruch. He really wanted to just experience being with the Rebbe for a Shabbos. And Rav Baruch, every time Rav Levi Yitzchak asked if he could come, he turned him down. He always turned him down. Because Rav Levi Yitzchak, as much of a tzaddik as he was an excited person about Yiddishkeit. And he was all over the place, and he had tremendous enthusiasm for mitzvos. And Rav Baruch was concerned that in his shul, in his house, he wanted everything to be a certain way. He wanted everything to be mesudar. Everything had to be appropriate. And after some time, though, Rav Baruch relented, And only though, the caveat was he made Rav Levi Yitzchak, he made him promise that he wouldn't deviate at all from the avoda of his community. And he would act in a certain dignified manner, keeping himself in check at all times. And so Rav Levi Yitzchak was willing to come and make that agreement that in the community and in his house, he would act in a certain way. And he didn't want anyone to ask him anything where he would get out of control, or Rav Levi Yitzchak would lose it. And he had to be in a certain way. And so they got to shul, and they went to shul, so everything was okay. Rav Levi Yitzchak had to keep his enthusiasm and excitement inward, and he didn't dance, and he didn't start screaming or jumping up and down, and he was okay. And they went to the Rebbe's house for the meal, and when it came time to have fish, so the waiter, whoever was serving, came around and says, would you like some fish? He said, let me explain something about eating fish on Shabbos. In the world of the Jew, eating fish, says Rav Levi Yitzchak, eating fish on Shabbos is a very special act. In fact, there are different kinds of fish, and these different types of fish speak to a person's avoda. And there was sweet fish, and that sweet fish is a person's excitement and love. And there's also a type of sour fish, which is a different type of avoda that a Jew had. And Saul felt you should eat sweet fish first, demonstrating that one should experience life's sweetness, so that when difficult times come, one would be able to endure. But others felt you should eat the sour fish first, so that when the sweetness comes along, it'll be enjoyed all the more so. And the waiter came, and the waiter said, what fish would you like? Rav Levi Yitzchak, he says, like? What do I like? Which fish do I like? I only like Hashem. And he threw his arms up, and he burst out screaming, I love Hashem. He jumped up and he was singing. And when he threw his hands up, he hit the tray of the fish. And the fish, you picture, like, if there was a video of this, it would go in slow motion of the fish going and landing on the talis of Rav Baruch. Rav Baruch wore his talis at the meal. And you could imagine that the fish with the sauce and oil going over all over his talis, you can imagine just how upset he was. And Rav Baruch did not lose his cool, I don't believe. And everything continued. And after Shabbos, so they wanted to wash Rav Baruch's talis. Rav Baruch says, you cannot wash this talis. He says, even though it's stained, I want to wear this talis stained, because this was stained with another Jew's love for Hashem. And it was so that talis was never washed, and it was passed down from generation to generation. The last person who had the talis was the Munkacha Rebbe, who only wore it on Yom Kippur and only at Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur. And maybe realizing through his Ruach HaKodesh about what was going to be approaching with the Holocaust, the Munkacha Rebbe asked and requested that he be buried in that talis. And that talis symbolized the enthusiasm of Rav Levi Yitzchak and the enthusiasm of a Jew who loves serving Hashem and just can't keep it inward and has to demonstrate that for the world. Lesson number 14. This is called, How Do You Argue, Not If You Argue? I remember probably when I was 19 years old, the first time I really felt a strong desire to want to get married. I remember hearing a story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, he was married to his wife for something like 60 years or so. I forgot the exact number. I believe it was up there. And at his wife's funeral, so the minhag in Yerushalayim was that you ask mechila at the funeral. And Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't. He didn't ask mechila. And it didn't seem like Rav Shlomo Zalman would go against a minhag like that. And it didn't seem, just in terms of his amazing midos, of course, that he wouldn't ask mechila from his wife. And so someone close to him afterwards asked him, like, Rebbe, why didn't you ask mechila from your wife? And he said that from when he got married to her, he told her that anything that you want for this marriage, for our family, if there's ever two different opinions between me and you, it's always what you want. I will always be mevatel to you for everything. And he said, we didn't argue. I never argued with her. And every single nekuda about how to run the household was on her. It was up to her. He said, that's why I didn't ask mechila, because there was nothing to ask mechila for. And when I heard that story about 14 years ago or so, it really touched me. And I remember thinking about it a lot and thinking, you know, I'm going to have that in my marriage. I'm never, ever going to argue. I'm going to tell my wife that she's able, she's going to decide everything. Anytime there's a discussion, an argument, it's going to go in her court. And after about a day of marriage, I realized that is not shayach. And that is a superhuman level that only Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach could be at. And Baruch Hashem, my wife and I, although we don't argue too much, there have been arguments we had. And it's about, like I said, it's not how do you argue, but it is how you argue. It's not if you argue. Because every single person in their marriage, in their relationship, is going to argue. And the most important thing is knowing the tools and having techniques about how to do it. Because it's inevitable, and it's something that really, really could almost make or break a relationship. Because those points of tension, those points where there's a strong disagreement about something, it's about dealing with it in such a civil way where you know that the person you're speaking to is a person you love, a person you are with under the chuppah, and you have the same goals in mind. And it's about how to get through that and how to work on compromising and working on dealing with those things together. And of course, obviously in dating, so even though it's not nearly as intense a relationship, you're not living with a person 24/7, but at the same time in dating, there are going to be times where arguments may come up. Certainly it will almost never be in the beginning of dating. If it is, that's probably not a good sign. But as you get into a relationship, when there are arguments, it's important to notice and to see how you're going to argue, to know for yourself just important tools about how to argue, and to be able to see, to realize that it's something that is a very, very important goal, an important thing to be on the lookout for. I heard a beautiful idea on Parshat Shoftim. I heard this from Rabbi David Chamidot, who works with me in Kushner. And he said that when it comes to the idea of a Navi Sheker is someone who is a false prophet. So the Torah tells us that you can't listen to them, and it's a terrible sin and avera and punishment if a person does follow a Navi Sheker. And the Torah wants to give us insight into how to avoid falling in, to succumbing to their wishes. So the Torah says one of the main things is that if they tell you to go against the Torah, you should know that they're not a real Navi, unless they have like such an establishment about them that they're a real prophet. Like the example is Eliyahu HaNavi by Har Carmel, where he went against the Torah to offer a bama, but that's one of the very few exceptions. Typically, if they ask you to go against the Torah, not a real Navi. But Rai Chamidot said, aside from that, it's not just that, especially because there are plenty of times where throughout Jewish history, like Shabtai Tzvi was able to gain thousands of followers, even though he was a Navi Sheker. So how do people know? What is it about Navi Sheker? How could a person recognize the falsehood in what they say? Rai Chamidot suggested the following. He said, the real Yesod, and the real way to see if a Navi is true or not, is to see if they're saying things that the people want to hear or that the people have to hear. A real Navi, like Yirmiyahu HaNavi, for example, he always said the MS. He said what they have to hear. And with that, he literally paid for it with his life. He was killed. And the life of a Navi is not a simple thing, giving Musar to the people. And if you're a Navi and you're telling people what they don't really want to hear, but you're telling them what they have to hear because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to bring this message to B'nai Yisrael, that's how you know you're a true Navi. But he said, you recognize the Navi Sheker. He says, throughout Tanakh and throughout Jewish history, the Navi Sheker is a person who only says what people want to hear. Everyone is on his side. Everyone's a fan of Shabtai Tzvi. He's telling everyone all the great things that they want to hear. And that is how you're able to recognize a Navi Sheker. And it's important because obviously, like I said, in dating, it can't always be what you want to hear. It can't always be everything is good, everything is amazing, because there are times where things are not as amazing, and there are times where arguments and discussions will come up. They're very important, and it's important to know how to deal with those things. Lesson number 15, being flexible. It's important I'll say it this way. There's certain core values that a person has to have, and a person should never be wavering from those values. However, when it comes to other things, maybe some personality traits, maybe certain customs, not like halachic minhagim, but certain things, certain ways that they act, a person has to constantly be flexible, and a person has to be able to like go with the flow, to not be rigid, to have leeway, to be understanding, to have sensitivity and compassion towards the person. And in dating, to be with someone who is not flexible, is not willing to do what you want. It could be even a very small example, where it could be that you want to go, this is certainly after, let's say, the first number of maybe dates after the guy really picks where they go. But let's say you really enjoy a certain type of food. And let's say in her mind, it's like, it's okay, but she doesn't love it. And so for her to never go to a restaurant like that, knowing that you really like it, that shows a certain rigidity, not being flexible, not saying, you know, it's okay, it's not my favorite food, but in reality, a person should say, it's not my favorite food, therefore, but I know it's your favorite, so I'm willing to go once in a while, I'm happy to go for you. As opposed to just being so rigid. I remember, I think I heard Rav Weinberger, one of his examples was, he was speaking to someone who was older, a guy who was older and not married, and he said to Rav Weinberger, I don't think this is an exaggeration, he said, I'm looking for someone who really is into French poetry. And like that was one of his hakpadas. He needed a girl who was into French poetry. And you can imagine that he had a very small pool of people he was willing to date, and it wasn't really working out for him. There, I would say something, I don't say controversial, but there could be different opinions about this. I've heard different rebbeim say different things, but about someone who wants to make aliyah. Making aliyah is an amazing thing. But sometimes if someone's living in America and you're dating people in America, then to say I'm only dating someone who wants to make aliyah, so it's obviously it's a much smaller pool. And like I said, that's probably more of a gray area. It's worth consulting a rav whether that's appropriate or inappropriate. But we all have these things where sometimes we are rigid. And it's important to be flexible, to be open, to realize, like, I remember when I started dating, so one of my big things was I didn't want to have a TV in my house, and I don't have a TV in my house. But it's funny because at the time when I started dating, like Netflix was not really a thing. I think Netflix at the time, as it started, was something you could send away to get CDs, like DVDs sent to your house. And then Netflix turned into what it became, and now everything is streaming on the computer. Everyone watches everything over the computer. You don't even need a TV. So like that whole hakpad I had is totally out the window. But I think honestly, even though it's something that I kept and stayed with, I think if a right girl came along that fit all other criteria of things I was looking for in terms of just being a great person, a balas midos, then it doesn't matter whether a person wants a TV or not wants a TV, and it shouldn't matter how much maybe they're going to be watching TV or things like that, or how much maybe the discussion, how much we expose our children one day to watching TV. That's important, but it's not like, no, never TV. Obviously, like these are important things, and maybe it might depend what the specific issue is. It may depend maybe how old you are, how picky a person has to be. These are really important things, but it's important to realize and to know when to be flexible and when not to be flexible. The Sefer Eish Kodesh, Parshas Noach, he discusses the midah of Bnei Yisrael being known as Am Kshei Orif. And he points out how on the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he wants to destroy Bnei Yisrael because they're Am Kshei Orif. And Moshe says that, you know, Bnei Yisrael are good. Elsewhere, he says Bnei Yisrael are good because they're Ankshe Oref. And the Pius Hetzner Rebbe points out, he says, how could it be that on the one hand, you have it being where Ankshe Oref is a terrible thing, and yet it's brought out that it's actually a good thing. It's where Hashem says it to Moshe, that Bnei Yisrael, that they're bad in it's Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Gimel in Shmos. But Moshe says in just the next Perek, in Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Tet, that, you know, it's good, Bnei Yisrael are good that they're Ankshe Oref. So what is it? Says the Pius Hetzner Rebbe that it depends what you're Ankshe Oref about. That being stiff-necked, being rigid, could be a terrible thing or could be a great thing. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying that it's bad, they're Ankshe Oref, because there are certain things that they can't be rigid about. They can't be negative and set in their ways, in their midos ra'os. They have to be able to change. And if they're Ankshe Oref, if they're stiff-necked, and they're not going to be willing to change their character traits, their midos, then he's like, well, I'm going to destroy them, I'm done with them. But Moshe says to Hashem, he says, no, Ankshe Oref is good, because whatever shita they end up being for certain things, it's a good thing. Having emunah in Hashem, believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's good to be Ankshe Oref, right? It's always important to know and to recognize when being rigid, when being Ankshe Oref, stiff-necked, when it's considered a good thing and when it's considered a bad thing. So I hope we're able to gain from this, to learn some important lessons. Hope this was applicable to you. As always, you can always feel free to contact me if you ever want to speak about anything. I believe on the YU Torah says to email there. My phone number, if you ever want to text or call, is 201-543-9308.